We'd like to turn to 1 Chronicles chapter 12. Read verse 23 and verse 39. Now these are they that came to David to Ziklag, and we'll just stop there and then go to verse 23. And these are the numbers of the bands that were greatly armed to the war and came to David to Hebron to turn the kingdom of Saul to him according to the word of the Lord. Verse 39, and there they were with David 3 days eating and drinking, for the brethren had prepared for them. Verse 1 and verse 23, we have those words, came to David. David, of course, is a type of Christ. As a result of coming to David, we see in verse 39, they were with David. They were with David. Again, David, a type of Christ. As we said this morning, what we read here is retrospective. It just simply looks back upon some past events in David's life. The events recorded occurred in two different places, Ziklag and Hebron. We see that in verse 1 and verse 23. Two separate times in David's life. The chapter has, as we saw this morning, two main divisions, and they are relative to these two places, Ziklag and Hebron. And our text verses, verse 1 and 23, mark those two divisions. In the first division of the chapter, verses 1 through 22, David is in Ziklag. The record of that is found in 1 Samuel chapters 27 through chapter 30. He had fled there with 600 of his men, and he was there, according to 1 Samuel 27 and verse 7, for 16 months. So what we read in the first 23 verses here occurred in a 16-month, somewhere in that 16-month time span. But also in the first chapter, there are three sections. The first division can be divided into three sections. You have verses 1 through 7, verses 8 through 18, and then verses 19 through 22. And those three sections simply describe various groups who came to David while he was in Ziklag. While David was in Ziklag, Saul and his three sons were killed in battle. We see that in 1 Samuel chapter 31. Following their deaths, David sought the Lord's will concerning where he should go, where he should live. Notice in 2 Samuel 2 and verse 1, Saul and his sons have been killed, and it came to pass after this that David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah? And the Lord said unto him, go up. And David said, whither shall I go up? And he said, unto Hebron. Which brings us to the second division of 1 Chronicles chapter 12. But what we find there in 2 Samuel 2 and verse 1 serves as a wonderful example. You and I. David wasn't just interested in the general locality of where he should go. He said, should I go to any of the cities of Judah? And the Lord said, yes. And then David inquired further, where? And he said, Hebron. The second division, 1 Chronicles 12, is the record of those who came to Hebron to publicly anoint David as king over the entire nation. He had already been privately anointed way back in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 12 and 13. And from that, he was recognized as king by Judah. But it was here in Hebron that the people would publicly anoint David king over the entire nation. And the ones who would come were the ones who formerly were clinging to Saul, absolutely refusing to recognize David. But now they come to Hebron and recognize David as king and pledge their allegiance to them, to him. So the chapter, 1 Chronicles chapter 12, is the record of those who came to David when he was in Ziklag, fleeing from Saul, and after Saul's death, when he was anointed king. Two different places, two different time frames, people pledging allegiance to David. And as you read through this chapter, you see several characteristics mentioned of those who came to David. And that's what we want to take note of tonight. They came from different tribes. They came from different backgrounds. But they had similar characteristics. All who came to David, we read there in verse 39, was with David. That ought to be how we want to spend our life with Christ. Every day with Christ. But that requires that we come to Him. I want to speak tonight on some characteristics of those that you can find with Christ. I want to mention 12. There are a few more here, but we want to mention 12, and we won't spend a whole lot of time on any of them. Each one of the 12 is a message in itself. But first of all, number one, on both occasions, and we'll spend most of our time looking at the second occasion in Hebron, but what is said, it applies to both occasions. First of all, they recognized and acknowledged, in both cases, the authority of David. All who came to David, whether it was at Ziklag or whether it was at Hebron, were acknowledging, were recognizing and acknowledging the authority of David as king. They realized that David had authorization from God, that he was the man that God had placed on the throne. Now, the ones in Hebron, it took them much longer to realize that than the ones who came to him in Ziklag. But better late than never. So they realized he had authorization from God. Authorization to command. Authorization to control. Authorization to rule. Authorization to be an influence in their life. So all these attained understood that David had the authority to give commands, that David had the authority to control and to rule their lives and to be an influence in their life. They realized that David has jurisdiction in their life. Realizing such, they came to acknowledge him as king. They were all saying, "He is my king. He is the one that I am going to follow." In both occasions, this is the gist of what they were saying. So we see one of the characteristics of those that you can find with Christ, who live their lives with Christ, is that they recognize the authority and they acknowledge the authority of Jesus Christ. Secondly, they came to be helpers in his cause. Notice in verse 1, the last words of verse 1, these that came, and these were of the household of Saul, by the way, helpers of the war, or helpers, helpers of the war. They were identifying themselves with the cause of David. Jesus Christ has a cause, and those who are found with Christ are helpers in the cause. So this, when they came and they were helpers of the war, it was realization that there was something greater than themselves. There was something greater than and more significant than themselves, and there was something greater and more significant than their lives. Something more important than their own lives. And that was the cause of David. They were there to be helpers. What that simply means is that they were there to be of service to David. That is why they came to David. They didn't come just to receive something of David. They came to serve David. They came to be a part of the service to David. They came to contribute to the cause of David. They did not come to take away in any degree from the cause of David. They did not come to be a hindrance. They were there to be of service to David. They were there to contribute to David's cause. And so it ought to be with each one of us. And so it is with those who are found with Christ. These individuals were occupied, wanted to be occupied with whatever David wanted them to be occupied with. We are helpers of the war. You tell us what to do. We are here to serve. And they wanted to fill their lives with whatever David's desire for their life was. Thirdly, they were ready and they were prepared. In verse 1, we see they were among the mighty men, helpers of the war. They were armed with bows. That is, they came to David and they're ready. They're to be helpers of the war and they came ready for the war. They were armed with bows and could use both the right hand and the left in hurling stones. They were skillful in shooting arrows out of a bow, even of Saul's brethren of Benjamin. And then notice verse 23 and 24. And these are the number of the bands that were ready. Armed to the war. So there it is again. They're ready. They're prepared to go to war. In verse 24, the children of Judah that bear shield and spear were 6,800. Ready, armed to the war. So these that came, they were ready. They were prepared. That they were ready simply means that they were primed. They were willing to do David's bidding. And they came and made themselves available to David. Prepared to do whatever David would tell them to do. This is what we read in 2 Timothy 2 verse 21. We're to be a vessel unto honor, sanctify, and meet for the master's use, prepared for every good work. We as God's people ought to stay prepared for whatever God, whatever the Lord would have us to do. To always be in a condition to be ready, to be able to do what God would have us to do. We should not be unprepared. We ought to be prepared. We ought to be armed with the Word of God, ready to do whatever God would have us to do. Perhaps he's had someone do the same thing for the last several years. That doesn't mean that that's what he'll have you do tomorrow. Don't rest on that. Be prepared to do whatever God would have us to do. So they recognized the authority of David. They came to be a helper in the cause of David. And I don't think there's anyone here that wants to be a hindrance to the cause of Jesus Christ. It ought to always be our desire to be a helper of the truth. They were ready, they were prepared. But then notice, fourthly, they were separated unto David. Notice in verse 8 it said of the Gadites, and of the Gadites there separated themselves unto David. Separated themselves unto David. That they separated themselves means that they willingly did so. Someone else didn't separate them. They willingly set themselves apart unto David. Unto, that's a very important word. Apart, set apart unto David. Set apart unto. That signifies or identifies priority. We set ourselves apart unto. It identifies our priority. It identifies the object of our life. It identifies the aim of our life. Does it not identify what is the most important? What we set ourselves apart unto identifies what's most important. What we feel is most needful in our life. And what is most important in our life is to be separated unto the Lord. What is most needful in our life is to be separated unto the Lord. People who have problems in the home or wherever, here's the need to be separated, to be set apart unto the Lord. And these men who came, they realized this is what is most important. This is what is most needful. And they set themselves apart from everything else unto David. Separated unto David, manifest that he was the purpose and he was the interest of their life. Fifthly, also in verse 8, they were very serious. Notice about halfway down, it says they were fit for the battle. They were fit for the battle. They came in a fit state. Fit to do what? Fit to do whatever David told them to do. We need to keep ourselves in that condition. Fit to do whatever the Lord calls upon us to do. We've said this many times. You may be called upon this evening, later on, to pray for somebody who's in desperate need. You may find yourself in a critical situation. You may be praying for your own son or daughter. Are you fit to do that? Are you fit to do that? We need to keep ourselves in a condition to pray. When it says they were fit for the battle, it means they were fit to the cause at hand. They were in a condition to meet the cause at hand. We don't know what the next cause is going to be. We don't know what we're going to have to face next. But we ought to keep ourselves prepared to do whatever God would have us to do. But all of this implies that they were fit for the battle, that they were very serious. To keep yourself fit for something, you have to take it seriously. So this was a very serious matter to them. And it ought to be a very serious matter. Serving God is not a game. It's not something we do part-time. It's to be our life. And it's to be something that we're to be very serious about. There's nothing more serious than serving the Lord and living for Him. So they viewed His cause to be of the utmost importance. They saw it to be something very consequential and something very vital, and they saw it to be very pressing. So they kept themselves fit for the battle. Sixthly, also in verse 18, then the Spirit came upon Amaziah, who was chief of the captains, and he said, "Thine are we." There was surrender. There was surrender. "Thine are we." They presented, they offered themselves to David. They did not come and say, "David, this is what I'm good at, and you can use me here or there. We're yours, David. Whatever it is. We're here to serve you." They handed over themselves to David. They gave up all. They let go. They relinquished possession and claim of their own lives and said, "David, we're yours." That's what we need to do all the time, is to relinquish claim, possession of our own lives. They yielded. They gave way. They submitted themselves to David. What did they submit themselves to David for? To be governed by him. To be governed by him. "David, you are the king. We are the servants. We belong to you. We're here to serve. Govern our lives." Those you find with Christ on a consistent basis are those who have their lives governed by the Lord. They want to comply to the Lord. They want to conform to the Lord. But when they said, "Thine are we," there was a denial of self. We no longer belong to ourselves. Our life is no longer ours. Our plans are no longer ours. "David, we're submitting everything to you. We're surrendering everything to you." That ought to be our life for the Lord. They confined themselves to David. It was a surrender to the will of David. It was a surrender to the government of David. And they were willing to surrender because they knew David would do what was right. David would not harm them. And again, that they surrendered, that they came and they said, "Thine are we." That's voluntary. You can't force someone to do that. That's voluntary. It's also foundational. It's foundational in all service to God. In 2 Corinthians 8 and verse 5, Paul, speaking of the churches of Macedonia, and he's speaking of their liberality in giving, and he says that they first gave their own selves to the Lord. They first gave their own selves. That's foundational. We are to serve God. But foundation is to give ourselves over to the Lord. What does that mean? Well, it means a lot of things. But it means that you put your plans on hold. You're willing to let go of your plans. You're willing to let go of your goals. Because there's something more important than my plans and my goals. And that is service to the Lord. So again, this is all very, very serious. And then notice seventhly, they identified themselves with the side of David. In verse 18, they said that they were on thy side. We're yours and we're on your side. Now when you tell somebody, I'm on your side, that immediately implies that there's more than one side. That immediately implies that there's some form of opposition. Again, it's implied all through here. We see that they've come ready for war. So we know there's opposition. But they come and they let David know, David, we want you to know and we want everyone to know we're on your side. We identify ourselves with you. In Exodus chapter 32, Moses issued a call to the people, the Israelites. It was a time of unbelief. It was a time when many of them were departing from God. It was a time of widespread weakness, idolatry, apostasy. People were caught up with the trivial. There was forgetfulness of what God had done. There was a lot of self-will going on. Denial of sin. There was shame everywhere. And Moses stands up in Exodus 32 and 26. He said, who then is on the Lord's side? And he challenged them to step forward. And then when they did, he gave them instruction. They were to kill some people. Their own family. But who is on the Lord's side? And when they came and said, David, we're on your side, they wanted it to be clear that they were on his side. They wanted it to be obvious. They wanted it to be visible and known. We are on your side. And we ought to want it to be known everywhere we go that we are clearly, visibly, and obviously on the side of the Lord. Whether it comes down to family or whatever, it doesn't matter. We must identify ourselves, we're on God's side. We're for what's right. We're against what's wrong. We simply want to be on God's side. And there is no better side to be on. Because God's side is the winning side. And it's the most beneficial side. Well, you know, I can see their point. You better be careful. Better be concerned when you start seeing the point of those who have an antichrist spirit. You better be careful that you say, well, I can understand where they're coming. You're going down the wrong road. They just need to know we're on the Lord's side. We're on the Lord's side. In fact, when they come to us with their problems, one of the natural responses after you talk to them was, well, I figured you'd say that. Well, praise the Lord. I'm glad you knew. Number 8, there was an open confession of faith. Verse 18. Toward the latter part of the verse, it says, for thy God helpeth thee. David, we're on your side, for thy God helpeth thee. They were confessing, we have faith in your God. We need to confess our faith every opportunity we have. An open confession of what we believe. An open confession that the Lord's side is the best side. Ninthly, they were courageous. You've got to be to set yourself apart from everything else unto the Lord. That takes courage. It takes courage. Verse 25, the children of Simeon mighty men of valor. They were mighty men of valor. Verse 28, and Zadok, a young man mighty of valor. So these were men, these were people who had a daring about them, a fearlessness about them. They had an audacity. They had a boldness. Again, we desperately need to be a people of audacity and boldness, unafraid to speak the truth, unafraid to rebuke error. Someone says, well, I don't feel it's my place. Well, whose place is it? When it's your family, whose place is it? It is our place. Because God put us in that position. We're to do it in a right spirit, not to do it in a hateful way. People need to be reminded, that's wrong. What you're doing is wrong. What you're doing goes against God. They need to be reminded. Well, they know. Well, maybe they do. Maybe they need to be reminded again. But these were a people who had backbone. They had spirit. They were courageous. Tenthly, verse 33 and 38, we see they could keep rank. They knew their place, and they could stay in their place. They knew they had a position. We need to all realize that. God has given each one of us a position. Various places. Homes, work, neighborhood, church. God gives us positions. We need to know that we have a position. We have a place. We have a place. We need to know our place. But we also need to realize that God could change our place. But until God does change our place, we stay in the place where He's put us. Simple as that. Again, it gets back to surrender. But they knew their place. They knew their position. And because they knew their position and they were content in that position. And we ought to be content where God has placed us, but also ready for any new position He might give us, or any new place that He might give us. It's not that we're looking for another place, but we ought to be ready. We ought to always be ready to go to the position that God would have us to be in, to go to the place that God would have us to be in. Again, I get phone calls, you know someone that's not pastoring, do you know someone who's looking? What does that have to do with anything? Nothing. Nothing at all. Why would you want a pastor that's looking? I really don't understand that. We need to know our place, keep our place, but be willing to move wherever God would have us to move. 11thly, they had a single purpose. Again, verse 33 and verse 38. They were not of double heart. It was declared in James 1 and verse 8 that a double-minded man is unstable. He's unstable. It says he's unstable in all of his ways. Christ warned against double-mindedness. He warned against the dual purpose of life. In Matthew 6, verse 24, no man can serve two masters. And that's followed by a reason. The reason is man's fickle. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. He's got to be single-minded. Paul stressed the same thing in Ephesians 6, verse 5, Colossians 3, verse 22. He spoke of serving the Lord with singleness of heart. There has to be a single purpose. Every individual, every child of God needs to identify or examine their purpose in life. Our purpose is what we deem to be most important. That's not our family. And that's nothing against family. It's not ourselves. Or it shouldn't be. It's what our purpose is what we deem most important. What we deem most worthwhile. It involves our intent, our resolve, our determinations. It's basically what our life revolves around. Whatever our life revolves around, whether we admit it or not, that pretty much defines our purpose. What does our life revolve around? It's basically what our life always comes back to. Always works its way back to its purpose. So what is the purpose of a child of God? Well, Paul said in Corinthians that in all things we're to do all for the glory of God. That's our purpose. That's the purpose of our life. To do all for the glory of God. Wherever that might be, do all for the glory of God. Whatever it might be, do all for the glory of God. We're to be single-minded in that purpose. They were single-minded. Lastly, they pledged their allegiance to their king. Verse 38, all these men of war that could keep rank came with a perfect heart. That simply means a sincere, unmixed, and undivided heart. Again, it's re-emphasizing that they had a single purpose. And they did this to make David king. And at the end of that verse, it says, with one heart, speaking of unity and also singleness of heart, to make David king. They were pledging their allegiance to David. We need to be reminded every day, several times a day, where our allegiance is. Where our first allegiance is, it is to David, or it is to the Lord. They were paying homage to him. They were pledging their loyalty to him, their devotion, their commitment to him. They were saying, from this day forward, David, you are the object of our life, you're the passion of our life. From this day forward, you are our king. Again, we need to know, especially in the times in which we live, we need to know, I need to know where my allegiance is, my first allegiance. But not only that, we also need to know, considering the seriousness of the times, we need to know those we surround ourselves with, where their allegiance is. We need to know that. It's a time of war, spiritual warfare, and you need to know who the enemy is, and you need to know who is really committed, who is really devoted to the cause. So in closing, again in verse 39, and there they were with David. What a beautiful picture. There they were with David. There they were with the king, with their king. Then notice the last part of verse 40. For there was joy in Israel. When we spend our life with Christ, we spend our day with Christ, there will be joy. When we pledge our allegiance and have these characteristics, and I believe anyone who is consistently identified to be with Christ has these characteristics. Because you can't be identified with Christ or be with Christ on a consistent basis without these things. So God help us. And again, I believe that most of us here, we desire to be with Christ. We're on the Lord's side. And we must be willing to lay down our lives for the cause of Jesus Christ. Most, if not all, here would lay down their lives for their children, their spouse, their family, for one another. And that's a good thing. But we ought to be willing to lay down our lives for Christ, to be a loyal subject of Jesus Christ, always ready for whatever it is He tells us to do, always prepared. We are that when we find ourselves in a right spiritual condition. If we are in a wrong spiritual condition, we're not fit. We're not prepared. And if we're not fit and prepared, are we really helpers? No, we're in the way. We're in the way. We don't want to be in the way. We don't want to be in the way. We want to be helpers. We want to be of use in the cause of Jesus Christ. And there is no greater cause. There's a lot of worthy causes in the world today. But there's no greater cause than Jesus Christ. So even though there are many wonderful causes, be careful. Be careful how much you give yourself to any cause other than the Lord. Because that is the most important of all causes. Brother Larry.